House will come to order. The flag salute, please stand. The flag salute will be led by Representative Lou Frederick.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremony will be presented by Misfits String Ensemble. The host, I'm going to get these names wrong, thank you. Ballo, founder and conductor, Portland guest of Representative Mary Nolan.
We represent the Metropolitan Youth Symphony. Courtesies. Just a note,
We do have the Oregon Student Association here today. I don't know if there's any of them in the gallery currently. You can wave and show your hand if you're with the Oregon Student Association. Welcome to your capital. I hope you have a great day today. Further courtesies, Representative Lindsay.
Good morning, colleagues. Many of you got to know my Chief of Staff, Laura Jansen, over these past, since we've been in session, but the thing is, she's no longer Laura Jansen, she's Laura Rutledge. She just got married in January, and she and her husband are starting a new life down in Medford, so we're bidding her farewell, and we hope to, if you'll extend the courtesies to her as she goes off, and we wish her the very best. Thanks.
For the courtesies, I do want to say thank you to our ensemble that came today, the Misfits. It was really a great show, and thank you very much for your participation in our group here in your capital. Thank you very much. Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to introduce Ashton Simpson this morning. He's sitting with me here at my desk. Ashton will be helping us in our office today. He's a seventh grader from Rock Creek Middle School in the Clackamas area. And I'm particularly hoping he can meet some of you, including Representative Matthews. I think you'll enjoy meeting Ashton, and I just wanted to also mention he happens to be my grandnephew. So please welcome Ashton Simpson.
Further courtesies, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to ask you to please extend your courtesies to a group of students from the Emerson School in Northwest Portland. Where are you? Are you Emerson School students? Are you here? Yes, please, I urge you to be courteous when they come. And I'll put in a subsequent request to extend courtesies to them. Thank you.
For the courtesies, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I have a group of guests with me from one of the great towns in House District 2, Riddle. On the side aisle here is some students from Riddle High School who are members of the National Honor Society. Please extend courtesies as they visit the Capitol today. Thank you.
We're glad to have you here. Welcome to your Capitol. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, again, I want to extend courtesies to the Misfits String Ensemble. The dedicated members of this small string ensemble are outreach ambassadors for the Metropolitan Youth Symphony, playing chamber orchestra music at special events and benefit concerts throughout the Portland area. MYS, the Misfits, is pleased to introduce the violin, cello, bass, and all the different string instruments. And so, pardon? And the viola. Thank you. I'm sorry I missed that. I did not mean to. Thank you all for coming. Thank you. The beautiful music that just reverberates wonderfully inside this chamber. So thanks for all the work you do. Thank you for going around the state. And thank you especially for coming today. Thank you very much.
Further courtesies, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I noticed that Oregon's longest-serving mayor is with us today, Wade Byers. If you'll stand up and wave, he is the mayor of the great city of Gladstone, is here for a consideration of the first bill that our colleague from Canby is going to be carrying.
Further courtesies. Verification of the quorum. Clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Parrish. Representative Parrish. Representative Schaffler. There's Representative Schaffler. Representative Thatcher. Representative Thatcher. And Representative Esquivel. Okay, is here. Representative Thatcher. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 4008, 4009, 4024, 4034, 4117, 4068, adopted HJM 201 and 202, passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate, House Bill 4039. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 1535.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Please, clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 205 in memoriam, Representative Alan B. Pinn, 1936 to 2011.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HCR 205. Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, it's, I think, very appropriate that we take a few moments to reflect on the life of Alan Pinn. And as has already been noted this morning, we have the mayor of Gladstone, Wade Byers, here. And he and another person that we're very familiar with, former state rep and lobbyist Roger Martin, were among Alan's best friends. And so it's appropriate that they be there. I've known Alan for about 30 years, and a great individual, and he's been very helpful in my own efforts. Alan Pinn was, and it's Alan would also appreciate that it being Fat Tuesday that I would wear a trinket. Yeah. If you knew Alan, you would understand that he thought we should celebrate at every opportunity, and perhaps twice on most of them. Alan was a true citizen legislator. He served two terms and then happily went back to his private law and real estate practice and also to raising his two twin boys. In a rare occurrence for those days, Alan, who served here in the House for two terms from 69 to 73, was immediately appointed to the Ways and Means Committee during his first term and served on that committee and the Emergency Board for all of his two terms. Then Speaker Robert F. Smith considered Alan his key eyes and ears on the Ways and Means Committee because his rival for Speaker had been the longtime co-chair of Ways and Means, Stafford Hansel, who was not pleased with the close outcome of that caucus election. I thought I would share two brief stories with you about Alan. One is his Ways and Means Committee decided to take a tour of Camp Rialia to see the National Guard. And in those days, in the late 60s, things were not good at the National Guard. They had old equipment and they were not a priority for funding or for concern. And so it seems that as they walked around Camp Rialia, Representative Pinn kept repeatedly asking the major who was conducting the tour, as they would come upon various machines, tanks, personnel carriers, most of all which were World War II vintage, he would ask the major if he would start them. And that was an interesting experience because there would be an effort to start them, and basically without fail, they did not start. And it was a pretty embarrassing kind of experience, and they just kept doing it and repeating it and repeating it. And if you knew Alan, you would understand he can do this with some very appropriate decorum. At the end of the tour, a UPI writer asked Alan for his reaction. And that was interesting because it became the headline for most Oregon newspapers the next day because Representative Pinn said, quote, "I think the Oregon National Guard is fully equipped to fight World War I again." He had a great wit,
but he also had the presence of mind. And mind you, something began to happen about the way the National Guard was equipped and funded. And the National Guard at the time was pretty furious for the embarrassment, but it turned out to be a good thing. Another thing that happened, and I wouldn't share all the details here, and I certainly don't know most of them, but there was another event that occurred in Clackamas County, and for some of you younger members, you may need to go and do a little Google work. There was an event called Vortex. Vortex. And it was an effort to avoid a rioting of two very different groups of people in Portland. And it was actually quite an elaborate thing that I think most of us in history think worked remarkably well. But we had two state representatives, a representative from Lake Oswego, Roger something or other, and Representative Penn, who decided that they should go out and do a fact-finding mission at Vortex. And they had the distinction of perhaps being the only people at Vortex who were fully clothed. Or at least that is the rumor. And I would refer you to someone that you may know around the building for some interesting stories about what they observed on this fact-finding mission and what an experience it was. But that was a good time for Alan and Roger. Alan was a distinctive individual, and he had some kind of idiosyncrasies. For example, he collected guns and had quite a collection of large mounted animal heads, but he never hunted. He loved going to auctions, and he was into buying unusual and unique kinds of items. And he also loved wildlife, and he daily fed several hundred ducks and geese on the pond in his beautiful home. And he always remembered to put out those salt licks on his property for the deer. After his legislative career, he was active as a community leader. Alan passed away on December 5th, 2011, at age 75. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, would Representative Kennemer, would you like to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass, will be adopted, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Aye. HCR 205, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I believe the group of students up here is from Emerson Elementary. Is that correct? Welcome. We already heard someone wish you well. Thank you for coming to your capital today. Representative Kotek, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
State your point of order.
Mr. Speaker, the minority report submitted with the committee report on Senate Bill 1544 was listed on the committee report file this morning. My question to the presiding officer is this. Does the content of the minority report satisfy the requirements of House Rule 9.15, subsection 6B?
I am ruling that the content that the minority report satisfies the requirements of House Rule 9.15, subsection 6, sub B, because the issue contained within the minority report of Senate Bill 1544 did come under discussion in the committee filing the committee report. Representative Buckley.
Mr. Speaker, I appeal from the decision you just made.
Um, Let's stand at ease for a moment. Could Representative Hannah Cameron Kotek come on up, Buckley? Representative Buckley, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, after a severe reprimand by the Democratic leader, I would like to take back my appeal of your decision with all due respect. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnhart, do you join in that?
Thank
he
you.
He does. It is appropriate, at the request of the member, to remove the appeal. Without objection, so granted. The decision of the chair stands. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4027, relating to limitations on liability of persons providing services without compensation and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4027A. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I bring you today House Bill 4027A from your House Committee on Health Care with a unanimous vote of 8-0. House Bill 4027A provides immunity from civil liability to persons described in the bill who are registered volunteers with nonprofit organizations and provide services without compensations. Colleagues, this is a good judicial committee drafted bill with no names on the bill that allows people to help our most needy. I'd like to express my support or appreciation of the House Committee on Health Care co-chairs, committee members, and committee administrator. The reason this bill was carried over several times is the proponents of the bill needed an amendment and requested we have agreement before sending it to the Senate. The good representative from the city of Bend worked with the trial lawyers to clean up one small issue. This small issue allows doctors to be part of the bill, but they must comply with existing statutes. Good bill, should pass. I urge a yes vote to get this to the Senate now. Thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just want to echo the carrier's comments. This is a bill that will clarify the law. It doesn't involve any dramatic expansion of the law, but it is clarity, and this issue has been, the issue of the ambiguity, I guess, in the law has been brought to our attention by volunteer organizations who want to help, want to deliver health care and other services to homeless camps. And lo and behold, at least in Central Oregon, there is a significant population in homeless camps. They are not people who are accessing health care in the normal clinical environment. We need to get this these services out there, and we have volunteers who are willing to do it with this clarification of the law. So I strongly urge an aye vote and appreciate all the work that's gone into making this this bill and the amendment that we will be pushing on the Senate side work as intended.
Further discussion, Representative Greenleck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to commend my colleagues from east of the mountains working on this bill. It's a fairly straightforward fix of a simple problem, and an aye vote would be very appropriate. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Hoyle, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 4027A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4079, relating to energy incentives, programs, and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4079B. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, when this body passed House Bill 3672 last session, the omnibus tax credit bill that clocked in at around 30-some-odd pages, we had a feeling that there might be some technical fixes that were necessary to that bill in order to address the complexity of it. This bill, House Bill 4079, contains the technical fixes to that bill around what used to be the business energy tax credit, as well as several other energy and environment-related tax credits. House Bill 4079B makes changes to the renewables credit, the transportation credit,
the residential credit, the biomass credit, the manufacturing credit, the conservation credit, and then adds in the transparency provisions to those credits the commitment was made to do on this floor at the end of last session. It clarifies several technical items, including that the transparency provisions apply to the grant awardee as opposed to the person who purchases the tax credit in the pre-sale auction, and make several other technical changes to the pre-sale auction in order to make that auction function more efficiently. House Bill 4079B also removes from the original version the biomass tax credit cap because of a technical issue with how that might be administered. This bill has received extensive working in both the House Energy, Environment, and Water Committee as well as the House Revenue Committee, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? Aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett, off the floor. House Bill 4079B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 1509.
Final reading memorials and resolutions, bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1509 relating to health and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the first time are referred to the co-speakers for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1575 relating to disorderly conduct in the second degree and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1575. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm honored and humbled to have helped facilitate and work alongside so many of you to help find the proper language for this bill. I want to thank the representative from Clackamas, the representative from the Bedrock District, the representative from Lake Oswego, the representative from District 55, the representative from Gresham, and the senator from District 4. And a special thank you to Legislative Council and the 39 other co-sponsors from last session and all who have helped and supported the concept from day one on this bill that we have here today. This bill will protect and acknowledge the solemn rights of families and friends to hold services for their loved ones without the hindrance from outside agitators. With the passage of Senate Bill 1575, Oregonians who are grieving can know that they now have added protection due to the deterrent effect of harsher penalties for disorderly conduct being elevated from a Class B misdemeanor to a Class A, if within 200 feet of a funeral service. This bill was drafted to reclaim the acceptable acts of expression within the modicum of social civility and with respect for those who are being memorialized. I am pleased with the results of this bill, which began last session with numerous meetings alongside Legislative Council to adjust language to consider prior case law regarding free speech. I am happy that the senator from District 4 continued this pursuit and we have this bill before us and ready for a vote today. Oregonians deserve such collaborative and decisive action, and I am confident that we have protected free speech. and that we have the freedom to mourn by maintaining an equilibrium between disorder and order, lawlessness and laws, vulgarity and civility. Colleagues, I urge you in joining me in voting aye for the funeral civility bill that we're about to vote on today. Thank you.
Co-chair, Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just only like to add one thing. It was brought up in committee, the emotional fragility of someone who's attending a funeral and how that may compel them to violence against someone acting in a disorderly manner and protesting that funeral, and that warrants the extra precaution and the extra protection as a public safety concern.
Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the representative from Clackamas.
Will the carrier yield? Will the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Yes, he does.
Thank you, Representative. Is this bill substantially different from the bill this chamber considered last session on a similar topic?
It's similar. The bill last time had two sections. This is very similar to the second section of that bill. The first section dealing with buffer zones was removed.
Additional question of the representative from Clackamas.
Further question, will the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Just a straightforward question. Is the purpose of this bill to limit speech?
Not one bit.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I think that this bill has found an appropriate path forward in a way to recognize that when there is disorderly conduct in a setting in which it can be more detrimental to people's feelings and to society, that it warrants a stiffer penalty. And that's really what this bill is about, is to make the punishment fit the crime. I was opposed to the bill last session on the grounds of free speech. I think this bill is in no way about limiting speech. It only addresses the fact that an existing charge of disorderly conduct should carry a stiffer penalty under certain situations, and I will be a yes on this today. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wydern, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's been addressed, but I just want to make it clear. This bill is no way limiting someone's free speech rights, but it's protecting someone's right to mourn over their loved one without the hindrance of someone's vulgarity or intruding on their right to have their free speech to mourn the loss of a loved one. So I urge everyone in joining me in voting aye today. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 1575, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 1504 relating to...
Question now, right?
Excuse me. Senate Bill 1504 relating to health insurance and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1504A. Representative Hoyle.
Colleagues, this is a simple bill. It's a technical fix. It was unanimous coming out of health care. It deals with the insurer's notice and requirements around when about when they notify people. I am happy to answer any specific questions, but what you should know is this is a simple bill. It's a technical fix. It helps consumers. No one opposed it, and I hope that you will give this bill, this very good bill, an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hoyle, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, sir.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Senate Bill 1504A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1507, relating to HIV testing and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1507A. Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Senate Bill 1507 is brought to you by the Health Care Committee. It came out of committee with seven ayes and one excused absence. It passed off the Senate floor unanimously with 30 votes. Currently in Oregon, the law requires a separate informed consent to test for HIV. The Center for Disease Control recommends against requiring this separate informed consent. People who know their HIV status are 56 to 68% less likely to engage in high-risk behavior than those who do not, and thus decrease the risk of transmission to others. Proponents assert that with the current testing policy in Oregon, there has been a lack of progress in preventing new infection, HIV infections. In fact, the increase of 20-somethings is on the increase in the state of Oregon. This bill removes the requirement that a person subjected to HIV testing give specific informed consent to the test. It does require the person to be notified of the test and be given the opportunity to decline. I encourage an aye vote today.
Co-carrier, Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, my dad was diagnosed with AIDS in 1986 and passed away 18 months later at the age of 62. He never lived to see me marry the man he mentored at Save the Children or to meet his grandchildren. His life, which he devoted to helping impoverished communities around the world, was cut short by an epidemic for which we had few treatments at the time. Much has changed in the past 24 years since his death. Treatment has reduced transmission and improved health outcomes at a far lower cost for patients who start treatment at early stages. HIV-infected people who are treated are 96% less likely to transmit the virus. Each prevented transmission is estimated to save $385,000. The problem is that too many people still go undiagnosed. HIV testing rates have not changed in over a decade, despite Centers for Disease Control recommendations to expand testing. Nationally, 21% are undiagnosed, and in Oregon, only 41% of adults have ever been tested. This bill will remove barriers to HIV testing, help find and treat patients with HIV, prevent millions of dollars in healthcare costs, and prevent the kind of suffering that I and so many other families have gone through as a result of this preventable disease. I urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I'd just like to note that there were two great residents from OHSU who brought this bill to the attention of our committee, worked with the committee, worked with the HIV community, perfected the bill, and did a great job. And we have a bill in front of us now that has everybody agreeing to and is a very important public health activity. So I join with my colleagues and urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Doherty, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shoffler, how do you vote? Is an aye. Representative Parrish is an aye. Representative Bailey. Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Is an aye. Senate Bill 1507A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I believe we have some more students from Emerson School in Portland. Is that correct? Are you just waved? This is a group that is coming to visit. Thank you for coming to your capital. I hope you have a great day. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1510 relating to ocean resources and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1510. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 1510 comes to you from the Energy, Environment, and Water Committee. I felt it might be of value for those of you who don't have an ocean in your backyard or might not be familiar with the Marine Reserve issue to take a few minutes for a history lesson, and my co-chair will deal more with the actual content of the bill. To start with, of my 71 years, 69 of it has been on the Oregon coast. I've lived it. That's part of our heritage. The process in Oregon to establish a limited system of marine reserves, those sites within state waters, did not begin in 2008, as a lot of people may believe. It was over 5 years before. The process began on October 26, 2000, and its end was brought on by an August 16, 2002 Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, which is known as OPAC, recommendation to establish a limited system of marine reserves that was so arrogant, scientifically flawed, and offensive to the public that it led to the end of both of OPAC 1 and the limited system concept. Their actual end came when Governor Ted Kulongoski signed House Bill 3534 into law in August of 2003. Governor Kulongoski tried to revive the system and reserve concept in 2005, but retracted it in 2007 when he assured stakeholders that he would not allow a designation of marine reserves or protected areas where it would cause economic harm. Therefore, the idea of a limited system linked to consideration of natural science and ecology was finished by placing economic effects as an overriding criterion. House Bill 3534 structurally reorganized OPAC and called for the deletions of the site designations and management prescriptions in the Territorial Sea Plan, ORS 197.423 sub A. Current OPAC members disputed this. House Bill 3534 was designed to give coastal communities meaningful input. However, the law is plainly written, and as I, as author of House Bill 35, gave OPAC the testimony on the intent and meaning of the subsection of that law. Deletions in the Territorial Sea Plan were negotiated compromise to abolishing the TSP altogether. It was my intent to give OPAC a clean slate on which to begin their work. From that position, OPAC cannot recommend a system of marine reserves without performing an economic analysis. OPAC did not do that in November of 2008. Finally, the law says that OPAC, if it wants to recommend marine reserves or marine protected areas, it does so to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. OPAC set its recommendations for the Redfish Rocks Marine Reserve Protected Areas to Governor Kulongoski November 29, 2008, not following the current law. The Redfish Rocks Marine Reserve Area came to being as a result of the Port Orford Ocean Research Team, which is known as PORT, and a seven-year collaborative process. In Port Orford, the city, some of the commercial fishermen, the mayor, community leaders, supported the creation of the Redfish Rocks Marine Reserve. The Redfish Rocks Marine Reserve is the most legitimate of the five marine reserve sites. The community teams that worked and made recommendations on the three other sites, in fact, struggled. It is my opinion that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife manipulated the team membership for the Cape Falcon Marine River site and that a no recommendation was not presented as an option. That is why we continue to see opposition and distrust regarding the Cape Falcon site. Marine reserves work only when the people affected and the communities affected buy into the process, and you see that where it has been a success and where they struggle. In reality, the only real value of a marine reserve is for research to better learn and understand what is happening in our oceans, the changes taking place, and the causes for those changes, whether they be good or bad. From real science, we will be able to better manage our oceans for our coastal communities and the dependence on that commercial fishing industry. We should note that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife already has the authority to do marine research. You don't have to have a marine reserve to do it. They can close areas to fishing, impose seasons and species limitations, trip limits, and other regulations to achieve any goal they desire. The threat of the environmental for-profit industry to run an initiative, create as many as 30 marine reserves, and its potential to shut down nearly all of the coasts and ports of commercial fishing is what has driven the last two marine reserve legislative bills, including Senate Bill 1510. There are, in fact, issues around marine reserves that the Coastal Caucus will need to deal with in the 2013 session, and I believe you'll see something coming forward. Thank you.
Co-carrier, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1510 directs the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to report within a year on the implementation of marine reserves and protected areas at Cape Falcon, which is located between Astoria and Tillamook, just north of Manzanita, Cascade Head, which is located between Tillamook and Newport, just south of Neskowin, and Cape Perpetua, which is located south of Yahats. The bill also requires the Scientific and Technical Committee of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, or OPAC, to prepare an October 22 draft report and a March 23 final report. The reports will use existing resources and be guided by one of our state's universities. I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 1510.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, you know that this is something that we've been working on for a long time, and on behalf of the Coastal Caucus, I want to assure you that this is a pared-down bill that we feel is the minimum needed to implement the recommendations of OPAC and to move us forward, particularly so that we can accomplish what the representative from Southwestern Oregon pointed out, and I appreciate the value of the historical look at this, the point that he made that we need to do the research, we need to learn. I believe that we will learn from this limited system. I want to also assure you that the driving factor in our minds as we put together this bill and this proposal to implement the limited recommendation is the well-being of our coastal community, our economic well-being, the preservation of our commercial and recreational and charter fisheries. I don't fish myself. I really like to eat what they bring me, and I want them to be able to continue to do that. I urge your support of this bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
He votes aye. Representative Parrish votes aye. Senate Bill 1510, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1531, relating to connection to federal tax law and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1531A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1531A is your perennial favorite, the Reconnect to Federal Taxes bill. In the past, this has been controversial. It is not this time. The bill, if you will note, simply moves dates. It changes dates in the bill from 2010 to 2011. This is pretty standard reconnection language and reconnection where we connect to federal taxes. There is one wrinkle in this bill that was added as an amendment in the Senate, and it has to do with the treatment of the tax treatment of agricultural cooperatives. There is some disagreement on the proper way to treat them within the tax code. We have settled this argument by basically affirming that DOR is to treat them as they have in the past and not the change that they proposed in the treatment in this particular type of tax entity, an agricultural cooperative. It is very specific, and it is in this bill because it relates to our connection, and it is the appropriate place to give clarity to DOR on how we expect that this tax treatment will occur. I welcome questions and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to state a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
I'm a part owner and member of an agricultural cooperative.
So noted for the record. Further discussions? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Kenny Geyer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Hoyle, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 1531A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, February 22, 2012, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. The orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Kenny Geyer. Announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to follow up on the eloquent plea our colleague from the River District made on the floor yesterday. While my desk is next to his, our districts could not be more different. However, I'm here to support his request. We all have crumbling schools in our districts, and we need to work together to improve all schools. However, Vernonia is a unique and unprecedented situation. Two 500-year floods in 11 years. The elementary, middle, and high schools and the district office were all flooded with sewage-tainted water. Students remain displaced in minimally repaired buildings and old modular classrooms located in the floodplain and vulnerable each winter to another flood. After the community stepped up with a $13.6 million bond, which was $1.90 per 1,000 of assessed value, a public-private collaboration has worked tirelessly for the last 2 years to bring it to a current total of $34 million of the $40 million needed. Because I have seen firsthand the national and local governments and private partnerships respond to disasters in Banda Aceh, Haiti, and New Orleans, I was honored to be a part of this urban-rural partnership in our own backyard. $6 million more is needed to keep construction on track, to help kids enter school next September in a safe setting, and to save this rural timber town. It is our turn to show how we, as a state, step up to help our neighbor. Thank you.
Representative Juan, further remonstrances.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we really are standing at the edge of a precipice. In the 2011 legislature, we did the impossible. We proved that we could govern on behalf of our citizens in a polite, respectful, and collaborative manner. We disproved what people see out of Washington, D.C., seemingly every day, endlessly, as the wheels of government grind to a halt and the government seems incapable or unwilling to address the pressing issues of the day that our citizens need to move forward. I was proud of the 2011 regular session, and I remain proud to this day. Our co-speakers led us on a path for the betterment of all of Oregon. Oregonians now expect us to do the same. They expect results from this body. And I wish I could say that we're meeting the challenge, but we're not. We cannot put politics over the policies that we know will help our fellow citizens, but that is exactly what is happening. And I'll give you one example. I submitted a bill to the House Revenue Committee. It was a compromise bill. I had no interest in the issue of politics. I have no interest in fighting a battle. I wanted a policy that would help Oregonians. And so that's what I prepared. It's a bill that for a limited duration of 2 years would reduce capital gains taxes, not across the board, not on publicly traded companies, on small businesses, the backbone of job creation in our state, the place where people who are unemployed have the first chance to get back on their feet. And actually, it's a different flavor of a prior bill that the representative from Beaverton submitted. Very close, not exactly the same, but very close. That bill will not get a hearing. It got a public hearing, but not a work session. I suspect, because I've understood from others, that the fact that my name is on the bill is somehow relevant to why it isn't getting a work session. I feel badly about that. I know that politics will be rearing its ugly head in a few short months, and that we'll be campaigning. But I ask this body to prove to Oregonians, like we did a year ago, that the politics are less important than the policy, that the politics don't matter because Oregonians are looking to us to prove for a second time in 2 years that putting Oregonians back to work is the highest value, that making sure that our state functions properly for the good of the people is what truly matters. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous two remonstrators just teed up what I want to say. So thank you to the member from Troutdale and the member from Southeast and Northeast Portland. To continue, they say that it takes six times. You have to hear it six times to really remember something and get it in your head like a bad song. But what I want to do is remind you that this Vernonia school project that is going forward will be stopped. The construction won't even be able to begin without the last piece of it. And they're not asking for a handout. They're asking for a hand up. They're asking for some kind of loan or something to get them going, give them a little bit more time to raise the rest of the money. But begin in the beginning of the construction period so those little kids who are forced to, I mean, they're carrying backpacks full of books probably as heavy as they are, from portable to portable to portable. So anyway, they want to be able to get them into the new building by September when school starts again in this fall. And they don't even have it furnished yet, but they're moving forward. They need to get the building up, and then they'll continue to raise money. They'll continue to beat down the bushes and unturn every rock. And, you know, it's been a phenomenal community effort. So please help us. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to remind us of the dangers that we face if we continue to increase debt load for our state. You may not be aware of it, but $940 million, just think of that, almost $1 billion in the current budget, the current biennium, is going to support past bonding that we've entered for lottery and for general funds. That's $940 million, almost $1 billion, that will not be able to be spent on education, on public safety, on health and human services, and we cannot continue to incur additional debt without being willing to pay the consequences in the money that we can't use for our programs. And when we bond additional money, that means we're committing not just our legislature, but legislatures for the next 20 to 25 years to make the debt payments so we get the immediate benefit, but we pay for it by not being able to fund programs in the future. Now, as we consider these things, yes, it may be appropriate if we were going to bond for a specific project that might benefit economic development, but not general projects doing more good with money that it will be coming out of the budgets from future legislatures. We have some capacity. Let's guard it very carefully and not incur and burden future legislatures with additional debt. $940 million in the current biennium just for debt service. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, dear colleagues. You get a flavor of some of the discussions that we have downstairs. I agree with much of what my co-chair has just said, particularly in that bonding for projects for economic development and that to help grow our state, the infrastructure that we need. They help our economy. They bring jobs about, particularly in a recession. I think all of us use debt in our lives. You know, I took out a mortgage on our house. I paid off my car loan last year. We all use debt strategically, and I think the key is using debt in a strategic way, in a thoughtful way, in a way that you know you can afford given the budgets that you have. So that's how I address it, and I just want to take a moment to respond. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.